Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to a very special edition of Shoot the Defence on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me to discuss the latest news from Serie A, or should I say Internazionale, which happens to be a team that I have somewhat of a soft spot for. I mean, for those of you who have been listening for a while will know, back in the early 90s, late 80s, Inter was my favourite Italian team because of the three Germans, Bremer, Lothar Matthäus and Jürgen Klinsmann. I was quite gutted to see Jürgen come to the Premier League and not play for my beloved Man United. But I've got a Serie A connoisseur, an Inter Milan aficionado, and the founder of Sempre Inter and football expert, Nima Tavale. Nima, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure, mate. It's an absolute pleasure. I was going to ask if you enjoyed the opening games, but it didn't go too well for your boys, did it?
No, it was classic Inter, isn't it? When Inter fans are excited and expect to win, we generally use and pull out one of those horrible performances. And when we're not expected to win and everything is doom and gloom, that's when we win. That's kind of Inter for you, right there.
Well, it's a shame that Icardi didn't get on the goal scoring list because you know he's got another drought there, hasn't he? With Sassuolo, they're somewhat of a bogey team for him, aren't they?
Is Sassuolo are the very definition of a bogey team for Inter. I mean, Inter have two wins against them, 2-7-0 wins, one at home, one away. Mm-hmm. But other than that, this was the seventh loss, Inter's seventh loss against Sassuolo in 8 games.
Wow.
So very much a bogey team.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's talk about this team because I know the loss led to Spalletti receiving a €10,000 fine for comments made to referee Maurizio Mariani. I know Spalletti was once described as the hammer by Icardi for his strong approach to discipline. Were you surprised to see Spalletti have a go at the referee, or is he feeling the pressure already?
I think he's feeling the pressure. It's a combination of two things. I think he's feeling the pressure already. I think it's also a fact that he was really, really annoyed with how the referee, how these changes to VAR have affected and started to affect Inter, because last season Italy ran VAR on a different, the VAR was applied in a different manner. This season, FIFA have gotten involved, and as always, when FIFA get involved, they screw everything up. Mm-hmm. So this is because basically last year, the VAR worked like this: that when there was a situation, the VAR referees, they had a look at it and they made like what they called a silent check. And if they couldn't decide on it, they'd have the referee look at it and then he would make a decision.
Right.
Now, the IFAB, the International Federation of Professional Referees, who decide all the rules, have decided to apply the World Cup rules, meaning that it's up to the discretion of the referee whether or not to look at the VAR.
Wow.
And he can decide to go with his initial feeling of a situation, which is why he gave us a very soft penalty to Sassuolo, and he decided not to give a penalty two penalties, the most blatant one being the foul on Asamoah, who was way more a penalty than the João Miranda challenge was. And this is something we saw in the World Cup, like when all penalties and offsides should be automatically subject to VAR review, I think, in order to get away from the unnecessary bickering and arguing. And last season, that's pretty much what the Serie A did. And it turned out to be a much more fair and much more, apart from Simone Inzaghi at Lazio, everyone was happy,
right,
with the VAR, because it turned, the controversy died out. And it was really, really nice, because it allowed us to focus on the football. Now, this season, it's not going to be like that, because they've basically turned the VAR on its head again and leaving up to the discretion of the referee. And the people in the VAR referees can't say anything unless it's a clear violation or a game-changing thing. So no, it's quite annoying. I think this is a rule change that will probably ruin This will cause a lot of problems this season.
Do you think it's happening elsewhere? Because I know the Dutch league, the Eredivisie have VAR, the MLS has it. I don't know if La Liga has implemented it this season or if it's next season. Premier League's next season, I believe. So do you think FIFA are doing it to keep everyone in line?
Yeah, they are. That's exactly what they're doing. But the thing is that it doesn't work. Like, you know, Italy has its own culture and its own history. And the Italian Referees Association was against these changes. Because they were sick and tired of being attacked. So now, Mariani, who was the referee last season that utilized the VAR system the most, now he didn't and was immediately shown to be wrong. So I don't understand this rule change, but then again, I rarely understand anything that FIFA decides or anything that UEFA and FIFA decide. But I think that's just a sign of health more than anything, yeah. Because those two organizations are different. They don't think they use the traditional logic that most human beings use.
That's putting it nicely.
Well, I like being diplomatic. It is early in the morning. It's only midday. I thought we'd keep this, so that you don't have to X-rate it on iTunes.
Well, I'll leave that for another show when we do it after 9 p.m. Leave watershed, as they call it. Yeah. Spalletti's case can't be helped, obviously, with these rule changes, with whatever's going on in the background. It can't help when the club legend like Giuseppe Bergami questions some of the signings made, like he did in his article for La Repubblica.
Well, I mean, what Bergomi is basically saying, I think it's been a little bit taken, a little bit of his comments have been taken a little bit too far. I mean, he did say that he thinks Inter's has had an excellent transfer summer and bought the right players. What he stressed was that Inter aren't ready to fight for the Scudetto. And he's absolutely right about that. Inter aren't supposed to win the Serie A this season. It's quite a ridiculous, it's a ridiculous expectation to have on a team that in the past eight years have had one second place finish and two fourth, and not even been close to winning anything. So I think what he's just saying is pretty much, you know, trying to keep, you know, expectations down to a normal level, because Inter aren't good enough to fight with Juventus for the Scudetto, and I doubt any team in the Serie A are. I think the team that comes closest to Juventus is actually Napoli, who have one of the best coaches in the world. They have a team that they've managed to keep together really well, a team that did really, really well last season, and a team that we saw against Lazio on the weekend can beat anyone.
Oh, absolutely. To be honest, last season was probably one of the most competitive Serie A campaigns I've seen in a long while. And I know Juventus ended up winning the Scudetto again, but Napoli ran them close. You know, with Inter and Lazio, that battle at the death was fantastic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, it was highly entertaining. It put a lot of the other leagues, blew them out of the water, I believe. But speaking of the signings that you mentioned earlier, what do you make of them, and what do you say are the minimum expectations for Inter this season?
I mean, the way I analyse the situation is that Inter should always, you have to start somewhere and then improve from there. And Inter last season came fourth in the Serie A. This season, I think the expectation should be to continue that and build something somewhat of a consistency. So improvement on that would be third, qualifying from the group stages of the Champions League and a minimum of semi-final place in the Coppa Italia. Those are the expectations, and those are the reasonable expectations. Now, obviously, anything other than that can be amazing. Can be anything better than that is a positive surprise. But I think the expectation, and what you can ask of this team, is a top three finish, qualifying from the group stages of the Champions League and a semi-final Coppa Italia place.
Mm-hmm. And what do you make of the owners? Because I know Eric Toye has done really well to make these acquisitions that he has done, but at the same time, I've heard a bit of mixed feelings towards him.
Eric Toyer has absolutely nothing to say at Inter. He's a complete lame duck. It's Suning who decide everything. He only has the title of president, But ever since Suning took over, the huge, this Fortune 500 Chinese company, tech company, they run the show. They, you know, they bought 70% of Inter back two summers ago, and since then they've been running everything. Eric Tohir has absolutely nothing to say. He's basically a lame duck, and in October, November, there's talk that Suning are going to buy him out altogether and make Steven Zhang the president of the club, who is the son of the Suning CEO, Zhang Jingdong. Tohir has had absolutely nothing to do with Inter for the past 2 years, and thank God for that, because he is probably the worst president Inter have ever had in our history. He, you know, Moratti, just, you know, being a fan, making mistakes. He's, you know, he was a fan, but he still managed to win. I mean, in terms of titles, Moratti is the second most successful Italian president of all time, second only to Silvio Berlusconi, with a number of titles he's won for Inter. Moratti was never a good businessman, Tohir bought Inter because he knew that he could sell it on and make loads of money, which he did, because he bought 70% of Inter, and he sold 40% of that 70% for the same amount that he bought the 70% for. So everything that he sells from now on is just pure profit. He's never really, you know, he just made one disastrous decision after another since taking over at Inter. What he did was maybe create some sort of begin by creating a form of professionalism in terms of the financial structure of the club. But Suning have taken that into a completely different level. There, Suning are, you know, Suning have taken a club that has never broken even, let alone made a profit, and turned their revenue stream and turnover to over 300 million euros per season without the Champions League, which is simply unheard of and truly amazing. And also they've professionalized the revenue and the PR side of this, the club, which is why Inter are growing so much. Suning have done an amazing job in only 2 years to take Inter from a club that was run financially as an amateur club into one of the best run football clubs in Italy.
I'm glad you cleared that up, because I know a lot of people I've spoken to have credited Tohir for all these signatures, but you're telling me that he's
had nothing to do.
That's great. That's good.
He's been a lame duck for the past 2 years. It is Suning. Suning bought 70% of Inter, buying Moratti out, and they bought 30%, 40% of Tohir's stake. So Tohir has only been president in name since two summers ago when Suning came in. Other than that, they've had absolutely nothing to say. He's had absolutely nothing to say about anything, and that's pretty good. His influence has been completely minimized since Suning came in.
Fantastic. Tell me something. You know, I come from a Greek background. There's a certain manager called Andreas Stramatsioni, who I believe was a Panathinaikos for a brief period, and he was actually an Inter head coach for a bit. Why do you think it went so wrong for him? Because he had a lot of potential, didn't he?
He's a young manager, but Stramaccioni was barely a coach, let's be honest. I mean, tactically, he was good at, you know, making substitutions and stuff like that. But when we're talking tactics and building a game plan, he just didn't know what he was doing. Inter have never looked more lost and more fragmented than during Stramaccioni's tenure.
Wow.
He just didn't cut it. He's a brilliant man manager. The players love him. But when it comes to actually building a tactical structure, the guy was just inept.
Fair enough.
No, but it's just, I mean, I remember those. I mean, you can blame people blame the quality of the squad at the time, but at least, I mean, I'm not a fan of Walter Mazzarri, but at least he was a coach. Stramaccioni wasn't a coach. Stramaccioni could barely hold a training session, which is why, for example, Antonio Cassano flipped out on him, and they had a real showdown, which led to Cassano leaving the club. But then again, Cassano's Cassano. Stramaccioni, in terms of tactics, he's barely a coach.
Do you know what? it astounds me to see the number of quality managers that, or head coaches I've stepped in into since Jose Mourinho left. You know, I'm looking at Ranieri, Gasperino was half decent, Benitez, he absolutely bombed. But then you look at Frank de Boer, and you know he came to England with a kind of big reputation. He was sacked after four games. Speaking to a friend of mine that knows a few people at Crystal Palace, he was saying that de Boer was taking free kicks in training, putting them in the top corner and saying, right, this is what you got to do, kind of undermining a lot of the footballers. That was another disaster, wasn't it?
It was again to Eric Tohir. That was his last decision. Suning came into the club and gave Tohir the right to continue running it as he was the president before. His first decision was to bring in. His decision was to sack. Was to annoy Roberto Mancini to the point and appoint Frank de Boer, which was an unmitigated disaster because that happened 1 week before the season started, which was a new Inter club record in destroying the season. And even before the season has begun, that was something that's really, really that was impressive even by Inter standards. He had to go. When he was appointed, we all basically said, is he gone before December, November, or October? We had a pool guessing on that, and I had December. My friend had October. Another guy had November, and he won because he was gone before November. because it was a disaster waiting to happen. I don't blame De Boer at all. I blame the people who appointed him. I blame the people who put the club in that position. But then again, after that. Tohir and his ilk were kicked out and kicked to the curb, and have had absolutely nothing to do with the club since then, which has only benefited the club.
Happy days, I guess.
Yes, very much so, very much so. Eric Tohir's decision, I think the most representative decision for his presidency is when he had the chance to buy Raja Nainggolan from Cagliari and instead chose to buy Hernanez, a washed-up Hernanez from Lazio.
Wow,
that is just representative of Eric Tohir. He just doesn't know anything about football. He's only in it to make money, and that's fair enough. But if you're competent, like for example, the Pozzo family who own Udinese and Watford and Granada, they're in football to make money, but they're competent. Eric Tohir is. I mean, he owns clubs. He owns teams in the NBA. He owns teams in the MLS. He's owned. You know, he's been a partner at Inter. He knows nothing about sports. He's a sport. He's a marketing PR business guy who happens to work in sports.
I see so many parallels between him and Ed Woodward at United. So many, I mentioned Ed Woodward, and I want to know your opinion on the Jose Mourinho saga at the moment, because it just seems that it's a massive, massive circus at the moment at United. And from what I've seen on Twitter, there's a lot of Inter fans actually backing Jose Mourinho, saying United fans are ungrateful. What are your views on, as I said, the circus that's Jose, Pogba and Woodward?
I think you can't blame Jose or Pogba. You have to blame Woodward, because this situation has hardly been a new one. Jose was very, very clear. I think, and Pogba and his man and his agent have been very, very clear with what they're not happy with. Woodward has decided not to do anything for 3 months, and then all of a sudden, deadline day looms. United have barely signed anyone. You've got a player who's won the World Cup, and you've got a conflict between him and the manager that is not as yet to be resolved. And that has been basically created and made so much more bigger by Woodward. I think his incompetence is genuinely staggering that someone can be allowed to do that at a club like United. I think it's genuinely unbelievable. I cannot understand. I mean, it's a little bit like the Real Madrid situation when they sold Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And they look completely dumbfounded and shocked that this would have a ripple effect. Woodward and United seem completely gobsmacked that, We didn't strengthen the season. We haven't strengthened since last season substantially. We haven't resolved any of the issues we've had last season, and yet the problems haven't gone away. Well, duh, you know. it's quite astounding, really. In terms of Jose should never Jose is a brilliant man and tactician. He, you know, once he gets that dressing room with him, but in order to do that, he needs to have be given the right tools to do that. He, you know, at Inter, his first summer in 2008, he insisted on three players: Muntari, Quaresma, and Amantino Mancini from Roma. All three flopped. So next, the following summer, he backed down and just basically told the then sporting director Marco Branca what he needed, what kind of players he needed, and Branca bought those players accordingly. For example, Jose insisted he wanted Carvalho. It was more financially viable for Inter to sign Lucio, and that was, you know, a success. Jose explained what kind of midfielder and striker he wanted. Branca brought in Thiago Motta and Diego Milito, and he said he wanted a trequartista, a number 10 player. Branca brought him Wesley Sneijder. When the Ibrahimovic to Barcelona deal was being discussed, you know, Jose said, that's great because I can play Eto'o as a left winger and as a striker. It gives me tactical fluidity. So that's how you've got to work with Jose. That just doesn't seem to be the case at United. It just seems completely... He's just pointed out players he wants, and he's got, and Woodward's gotten them this summer excluded, and then it hasn't worked out, and then Jose's been standing there alone. Now, you know, this is, you know, modern football. You have to have a sporting director, you know, despite Arsene Wenger's ridiculous statement saying that what is he going to do, direct traffic outside the training ground? Well, for one, you know, dear Arsene, what would have happened is that you'd have more players that are suitable to your system, and you might have actually won something for the past decade. That's what Italy has always been good at, having sporting directors who can read the situation really well, who can put together a project and get everyone working together. That seems to be lacking at United, and I can't really blame United fans for being fed up, because the amount of money United have spent on players and the abysmal results that you see on the pitch is just sickening, and I can understand their frustration. But I wouldn't this blaming Jose Mourinho thing. It's easy to blame the manager, but I personally think it's Woodward, who's failed in everything he's done undertaken since taking over at United.
Yeah, the thing is, I do a United show with a few of my friends, and you know, I spoke to Jamie Jackson, who broke the story that United are looking at bringing in a sporting director or a director of football, but. What astounds me, again, is they actually honestly believe, the owners and Woodward actually believe, that Jose Mourinho has like a short-term view, and, you know, his targets were overpriced. And I'm looking at the performance of the weekend against Brighton, and you've got two central defenders that, in their early 20s, they could have really done with an Alderweireld out there, or a Boateng, you know, or an experienced head, which is why when you mentioned Lucio, it made perfect sense for Jose to bring in a player like that. But I just think that when it comes to bringing in a sporting director at United, it's just another person to be in the firing line for when things go wrong, because Woodward will hide behind him. Now, I'm sure it happens in Italy where, you know, you've got top brass that are very close with people in the media, and they can spin certain stories to make them look good. And I think that's what Ed Woodward has. He's got a few friends in the media that he, you know, feeds a few stories here and there, you know, embargoed stories. And he gets away with it every time. But the fact is, and you know, I don't know what it's like at Inter at the moment, but with United and the Glazers, all it matters is top four. You know, that's all that matters. And with the money that's coming in from the TV revenue, it's almost as if they don't care. You know, they don't need to spend X amount of money on players. All it is, when you're bringing in marquee players, it's just to add to the portfolio to make them more of an asset. I mean, the club's now worth $4 billion according to the stock exchange. It's crazy.
So, yeah, well, that's absolutely right. In Italy, it's different, because in Italy they have a different culture. The sporting director, director of football.
Well, Monchi's doing a good job at Roma at the moment, isn't he?
Well, yeah, he is. I mean, not just him. I mean, Italy has had these roles for the past 60, 70 years, and therefore there's a culture of it, which is great. I think with the Premier League, obviously, with so much money being involved, and it's the same situation with Kroenke and Arsenal, isn't it? Where he was just happy to play in the Champions League, because that just raises the revenue.
That's right.
Yeah.
A couple of things before we go. There's a certain Brazilian striker. I'm not talking about Ronaldo. I'd like to hear your opinions on this player who was actually heavily tipped to be a goal-scoring freak in Europe, and that's Gabriel Barbosa, also known as Gabigol. Why do you think he hasn't been a hit at all?
Because I mean, I'm not even sure if he's how. I just don't think he cares about playing football at all. I think this is a guy who's made a lot of money, who seems completely uninterested in playing football. I mean, he scored loads of goals for Santos, then he got his big money transfer to Inter, and then ever since that, he's been an absolute disaster, to be honest.
So it's more of an attitude thing. I know Adriano had a bit of an issue, allegedly a drinking problem.
No, he was an alcoholic. Right. I mean, that was not like, I'm not using that as a, you know, hyperbole. This guy, you know, he's even talked about it. He had a drinking problem.
Right.
He has a problem with drink because that started with his father passing away and it got deteriorated from then on. No, that was an issue. With him, it was a tragic issue. His father's death completely destroyed his life, and he never really recovered from that. And he developed a drinking problem. So, with Gabigol, I mean, with him, it's more an issue of it's diva. He just thinks he's God's gift to football. He's a billion. He's a multi millionaire, and he doesn't feel he needs to succumb to anyone's tactical desires or wishes. And he just, you know, it's like the kind of like the classic, you know, stereotype of the Brazilian technical footballer who plays on the beach for fun.
Yeah.
That's the kind of attitude he's got.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, mate, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Really, really appreciate it. I hope you can come back on at some point. We can talk more about Inter, Serie A, and hopefully next time you're on, Inter would have won a game that we can actually discuss in a positive sense.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
No, thank you very much for your time, man. Before I let you go, would you like to tell our listeners your Twitter handle?
Yeah, sure. It's at Nima, TAVROD, Nima Tavrood. Simpleinter.com is the site's handle.
Great stuff. Well. Is there a podcast that goes with it as well?
Yes, we record every Monday and release on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. Studio Inter, it's called. It's on our release it on our YouTube and via our on iTunes as well. And we've also launched the YouTube channel yesterday. So yeah, just check us out on all wherever nowadays there's a million social platforms. But just the Simpleinter.com or Studio Inter.
And congratulations on episode 100, because I know David Amoyel was on and he's a fantastic guest, and I haven't tuned in yet, but I shall do later.
thanks a lot. Yeah, it was a great guest.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thank you for listening. We're also on Twitter at Shoot the Defense. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join in the discussion, because we have quite a lot of debates on there. It can be a bit funny, because you know how people can get with their opinions, but you'll enjoy it. Until next time, take care.